From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 10th day of August 2018. It's USDA Report Day. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and this morning's bearish numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Jean Payne from the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association with Joe. She's the president of that organization and has just completed a survey of the ag retailer members about dicamba and its use across the state. It's an interesting conversation. I hope you can stay with us for that. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report on this USDA Report Day. It's the 10th day of August, and we're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Kind of a catastrophe this morning in terms of the numbers they dropped out from the United States Department of Agriculture. Huge number for the soybeans in yield, big number for the corn in the yield, though I was, and we've talked about this a little bit, surprised that the trade was as low as it was in its estimate. Given what we thought they were about a week ago. What'd you make of the numbers for the day?
Yeah, I think, Todd, you hit it on the nose with what you just said. I think the crop ratings and the satellite imagery won out. The population of the corn and the beans, the vegetative index of the corn and the beans definitely won out on today's report. I would have been surprised if we hadn't seen a slightly higher yield because of their methodology. I was not expecting anything over 176 on corn and nothing over 50 on beans. Don't get me wrong, but it was not going to be a shock to me to see a bigger bean number, especially, and I was mentally prepared for the top end of my yield estimate of 176 on corn. This is one of those reports where in the rearview mirror, because of what you and I talk about every year, and especially the last 5 years, that objective yield, that ears per acre and implied ear weight, I think this is going to boil down to in the corn and in the beans. If we don't get the rains in the next 2 weeks, we'll be talking about this in a month about the beans. But right now, I think there's less likelihood, as advanced the corn is in production and dent and actual harvesting going on because of drought areas that are starting to really go down fast at this stage, that you're probably up there on the population, USDA at roughly 29,250 ears per acre. I have no argument with that. It's very hard to walk through a field of corn this year. What I do have a problem with is they're sticking the implied ear weight up near the all-time high of 16 and the second high last year, up around that 0.355. I think it's closer, and it's going to end up being closer to 2014 and 2015. So this may be the biggest yield in the corn. Does that mean you buy the corn? No. You had the dollar, and the meal technicals clearly tell you, sell beans and just sit on your hands when it comes to the corn and wheat, because the beans are probably going to drag the corn and wheat down sometime between now and that next crop report, unless we miss all these rains that the models are forecasting in the next 10 days.
Yeah, I got a different question for you because, of course, and I don't talk about this on the air often, but I was thinking about what I need to do with my own crop, and I have beans this year, and I could not pull the trigger, though I was of the mind that the bean crop, and you heard me say this yesterday on the Closing Market Report, was a big one, because I didn't know what the USDA was going to do with the Trump bump or the payment that was coming out. And I had no idea what it was going to be. And I'm wondering, did that come into play with your clientele as you were talking? Because it just seems like it makes a big difference.
It did. And especially with the idea that we're not sure if it's coming because, you know, what Secretary Perdue has been talking about in the last few days about, we hope we don't have to use it or something like that. That's not a direct quote, but that's what I heard. And that's what other clients heard from me. I have talked to clients that I haven't talked to in a matter of months, if not a couple years, in the recent week or so, or the recent 2 weeks, mainly on the beans, Todd. All I can say is there's nothing preventing us, because the meal giving up its 200-week moving average, We have not seen a substantial close below that moving average since February. The fact that the dollar has broken above 95.50 and is now impacting all of the key emerging markets. And then you throw on top of that a 785 million bushel U.S. carryover. It don't sell the beans when we're up against the low from mid-July of 826 and a quarter. Do it now and look to buy it back. Because if you have those kind of bushels, you're probably going to have to sell one and store the other and make room for the one that you're going to store. So I would not hesitate if it were me. And that's what I'm giving counsel to producers that are trying to play catch up at this point.
Yeah, that's really what I was trying to get at, because it is difficult, because now you're looking at storage. I guess it's about storage at this point and what your basis is likely to do by the time we get to harvest.
You're not going to get a better basis if those rains come and USDA is right. Whereas with the corn, because we have limited competition and the wheat market has already shown us some daylight, I think you could see both a futures bump and a cash basis bump in the corn that really makes it more worthwhile on a revenue per acre level. I just talked to a client about exactly this, and I said, look, if you've got 70 bushel beans in some of your fields, not whole farm, but 70 bushel beans in some of your fields, and you're looking at a $600 revenue that you just want to have or have to have, and you take that 600 into 70, that's an 857 cash price. Look, you're still at $600 of revenue right now, gross, if you think you've got fields that can do 70 bushels. And so that's where I would start if it were me.
I'm wondering, is there a disparity here between the far western Corn Belt, I'm thinking of the folks in the Dakotas, where beans are going to go out the Pacific Northwest and should have gone to China, but may or may not be able to go there, although we've had some pretty good shipments to other Asian ports at this point. Are they under more gun here than some of the rest of the Corn Belt?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, this is a big point. We did not see a change in China's imports from last month at 95 million tons. USDA on their world soybean number stated about 157, just under 158 for world exports. We're dealing now with 106 million ton ending stocks figure. That's a 30% stocks to use ratio. That's about 2% more than last year in the final number, but it's such a large 2%. So I think what I'm looking at very briefly, Todd, is I think there's yield to be cut in the corn in states like North Dakota. Spring wheat's being harvested right now. I spoke with a guy that's hearing some harvest reports. They're not very happy with the yields. They're real happy with the quality. But I think North Dakota, South Dakota, which is at a record in today's report by USDA. I think Nebraska at a record's too high. And I think even Iowa could lose a couple bushels at 202 bushels statewide, because they have a pretty substantial drought situation and right in the center of their state, and producers are talking about that.
So finally, these numbers roll right into the U.S. and into the world ending stocks, and they upped both of them for corn and soybeans. The wheat was lower this month.
Yeah, and that's, as I said, the 30% on the world soybean stocks to use ratios, it's just too burdensome right now. Whereas with the corn, whether you look at the U.S. or the world stocks to use, they're still very manageable. U.S. corn stocks at 11.2% is still below the 13.6 last year. And we're dealing with almost 15 billion bushels of total demand in the U.S. corn. So that's really supportive to the price eventually once we run the gamut with the soybean complex.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend, Todd.
You too, and thanks, Mike. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Jean Payne is now here. She's the president of the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. Thanks, Jean, for being with us. We're going to talk a little bit about a dicamba survey that the IFCA, your organization, just completed. But can you tell me who your members are and what you represent at this point?
Well, we're all-encompassing of the ag input industry. So the members of IFCA are the manufacturers of both fertilizers and pesticides, the distributors of those products, and then the ag retailers who provide the end-use advice and application services to the farmers. Also, the people that make the sprayers and the floaters and the nurse tanks and all the equipment that we use in the custom application industry. So we have a broad spectrum of representation in the industry.
For our non-agricultural listeners, why is it that you might survey them about their use of a product called dicamba? It's a herbicide that's been around for more than 50 years now.
Stewardship of both pesticide and fertilizers has always been in the mission statement of the IFCA. So for our perspective of representing the industry, we really truly feel we can only be successful in that and have the trust of the legislature and the public and even the ag community by making sure that the products that we introduce into the environment to assist in crop production are used judiciously, used legally, and perform in the way that we expect them to perform and help the farmers be profitable in their pursuits. So that's the core of our mission statement. So anytime we have anything in our industry, whether it's fertilizer or chemical or even equipment, that raises concerns about how it impacts other people outside of agriculture, it's a very important issue. And so that's why we surveyed our applicators of this particular herbicide, because we knew there were some issues out there that impact other farmers that don't use the technology and also the public that lives around the agricultural production field. So that is why we wanted to get the feedback from our members who do this every day for a living to share with us what their experience was when they applied dicamba in 2018.
This is the second year that dicamba has been available commercially to apply to soybeans across the whole of the United States, though it will be up and is up, actually, for review by the United States Environmental Protection Agency. You surveyed your applicators in the state. How many survey results did you get back, and how much of the soybean crop grown in the state do you think it covered?
Well, we had 113 responses, but we have about 300 ag retail members that work for individual companies. We have 116 responses, which was actually the way that some of them replied was on behalf of their entire company. So even though they might be one company, they might have 15 applicators working on their behalf at different locations throughout their territory. So we feel when you take that into consideration of those people who participated as one response, but representing multiple applicators, and, you know, we felt we had about a 50% response rate, which for any survey would be good, Todd.
Did you ask them how many acres in their area they thought applicators applied or commercial applicators applied versus farmers?
Right. We didn't ask them acres, but we did ask them percent of acres. And understand, too, our in some places, the traits of this new technology are not as prevalent as in other parts of the state where the weed pressure is higher. But we got the feedback that upwards of 70% of all pesticide applications made of dicamba were made by commercial applicators, and around 30% or less was actually done by private applicators or the farmers. So from that perspective, then we knew that much of the dicamba, the vast majority of it, was applied by professional applicators.
Was it applied during the season or prior to season or both?
So they applied it as a burn down ahead of season. And then many of them, not all of our members, also applied under the new label use, which is over the top of soybeans, so post application.
And for farmers, I did, and I've got the survey in front of me. So you did ask them if they would rank the success of weed control, both of Xtend and of Liberty Link soybeans. I thought it was interesting that they thought better than 70% excellent control for the Xtend beans of weeds, and about 18% or 19% for the Liberty Link soybeans. So they were very high in the good area. So that's one comparison, but really what we want to know about is whether they believe it drifted or moved this year or not. And as I read through the survey, I thought it was interesting, and you can give me some of the numbers, but it appeared that everybody thought everything worked pretty well and better than last year, but they also on the same point said, yeah, we still had a lot of movement around.
Yeah, I think it really the results could be summed up this way. Our members very strongly believe that this technology is very promising and very effective on weeds that over the last several years have been very difficult to control. So from that standpoint, extremely successful. From the standpoint of the applicator, in all circumstances, being able to keep this product within the targeted field and not impacting other sensitive soybeans or other sensitive areas, it was very clear that there was frustration over that, and our membership was pretty much split 50-50 on if the current label for this product is truly protective of their efforts to do that. And Todd, I think the difference with the commercial applicators too is that they do this for a living. This is their livelihood, to apply pesticides and fertilizers and use them in the way that they help that farmer and don't impact anybody else. And so when they see a product that does impact other people, even when we've had very concerted effort and support to do this right, and training and a very, very rigorous label requirements for application, when they see that, it's quite distressing to them because they feel like, I'm a professional, I should be able to not have this happen. And they want answers as to how they as an industry can do a better job. And because they understand what's at stake here with fellow farmers and also with consumers and the public.
Anything else out of the survey that you want to make sure we cover before I get to one final item, which is what US EPA has yet to do with this product?
I think that our members, there was another question we asked them about, you know, how concerned were they about the future of weed control and the future of the use of this product for them, from their perspective. Because when a product goes off label and the Department of Ag investigates and they find that the applicator was an error, there's a monetary penalty provision, but there's also a provision that it could eventually jeopardize the ability of that person to have a license, which means their livelihood is at stake. So they're very concerned about that. And they're also concerned that, you know, use of this product without other modes of action on weeds could eventually lead to the same resistance issues that really brought dicamba to the marketplace in the first place for use on soybeans. So I think those were two very valid concerns and very much echoed in the membership. Even the ones that felt they used it successfully voiced that they're concerned with those two items in the future.
What's the roadmap for the rest of this year and its potential US EPA registration?
Well, I wish I knew, but I can tell you that the dicamba complaints that we took, that the Illinois Department of Agriculture took last year, were up another 20% over them in 2018. So even with a very concerted effort and mandatory training for all applicators on this label, we still have more than 300 dicamba-related complaints, when in the history of the Illinois Department of Ag, dicamba use has always been like maybe a half a dozen complaints a year. So you have to be realistic and look at that there's an issue here, Todd. And that's what our organization really wants to try to figure out, working with everybody involved, the people who make this chemical, obviously our members who apply it, but then also the farmers that really do want tools to control weeds. There has to be ways to move forward. And so the most important part of the survey was getting recommendations from our applicators of what could we do to improve their ability to keep this on target, help them be able to be good stewards, address the very difficult issues that are out there, work in concert with the Department of Ag because they regulate our industry, and then hopefully be able to share those recommendations with US EPA because this is a big decision looming here in the next 4 to 6 weeks.
It appears that Acting Administrator at US EPA, Andrew Wheeler, has decided to be involved in the process. That seems highly unusual to me, but I don't cover these all the way up and down. Is that normal, and why do you think it's happening?
Well, there are thousands of pesticides that are registered for use, not just in agriculture, but in lawn care and homeowner structural pest control. So, you know, I would say that the US EPA administrator normally probably isn't involved in every single one of those re-registration decisions, which there are hundreds every year. But in this case, you know, soybean crop is very important for American agriculture. And I'm sure he's got a vested interest in making sure that, you know, the interests of the soybean farmers and the interests of the public and the regulatory agencies can all somehow come together. And it's like anything, the buck stops here. Whether or not the administrator is involved in every pesticide decision, ultimately whatever happens comes back to the administrator. It's like anybody who's in charge, that's the way it is. So I don't view this as anything too odd because, you know, the United States is a major grower of soybeans. And, you know, herbicide use in soybeans is a big issue. And I think his involvement, you know, may be a good thing in that we know that, you know, he won't be surprised by anything later, right?
Indeed. Okay. Hey, thanks so much, Gene. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
That is Gene Payne, the president of the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. This is the closing market report for Friday afternoon. Time to check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. Eric, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, so let's talk a little bit about what the month of August will look like. Do we have anything setting up that gives us a cue?
Yeah, well, you know, last year about this time, we were watching a pretty substantially deep, broad trough set up across much of the Corn Belt. And that's what gave us, you know, one of our coolest Augusts on record. And we don't see that this year, but at the same time, I don't see major heat stresses, at least for the next 10 to 15 days across much of the Corn Belt. Now, when I say that, know this, the predictability of our long range models right now is not the best. The performance metrics will show that they're down. The U.S. model has actually been performing really poorly. So I've really stuck with the European model. And here's what it's got to say. We've got three troughs to be watching right now. We have one that's way out in the Pacific Northwest, one that will be developing in Texas, and one that's currently in the Eastern Corn Belt over there toward Ohio. Now, the significance of this is that when the one that's in Montana moves south and east, when the one develops in Texas and moves north and east, they kind of meet over Iowa. Now, why we got to talk about this is as that trough that's sitting over Texas is developing this weekend, it will be drawing a lot of moisture on the eastern side of it. And as they merge and move across the middle part of the country, this is going to give us our best chances of getting some rainfall stretching from Texas through Oklahoma into Missouri, which desperately needs it, then into Illinois, Indiana, you know, parts of Iowa, Wisconsin, I mean, right through the heart of the Corn Belt. Now, this would be arriving here sometime around Tuesday or Wednesday of next week, and we need this rain. The southern half of the state, south of I-72, has been doing really well on rain recently. Middle part of the state, okay. Northern part of Illinois, they need it. They need some rain to help finish both the corn and soybean crop. Same thing with the southern half of Iowa. So this is one of those systems that if it materializes the way that the current models are suggesting, will be bringing rain at the right time to the right locations. That'll probably push those bean numbers even up higher if the rain comes in with as much as we're expecting. Then I see this. The ridge retreats west again. And if it goes back out west, the fire threat continues, the heat stays there, and we avoid the major heat stresses in the Corn Belt. And by the way, we might be able to see some of the influence of those fires here in Illinois over the next couple of days, because not only are there fires in the western United States, they're in Canada, and the flow right now might be bringing in some smoky kind of haze around this area. So prepare for maybe some brilliant sunsets with all that smoke in the atmosphere in the next few days.
Interesting. Hey, you mentioned the rainfall. There are some dry areas in southern Illinois, other parts of the Corn Belt. Do we know how bad those are and what are your potential resolutions for those?
Yeah, you know, so when we try to assess the size of this garden spot, it's fairly large, but it is fragmented. We have some spots that have been very dry. There are a couple pockets in the far eastern Corn Belt that are dry over in Ohio and parts of Indiana. We have Missouri. Northern Missouri is just absolutely parched, so that's not in good shape. And then you got to go up to parts of South Dakota. Remember, South Dakota, every year they're adding more and more corn and soybean acres. And so when you get rid of that Huron to Mitchell region, which is a very productive area, they've been dry too. But when we've got good rains on big acre fields and big production fields in Illinois and Iowa, parts of Minnesota, we tend to be able to carry the country in terms of these big yield numbers. So those are areas that we're going to have to watch over the coming weeks. If they get rain, we could expect these numbers to continue to go up. And if they don't, it's going to continue to kind of just nick away a little bit on our overall yield and production numbers.
And finally, take me to Europe where they've been suffering drought.
Yeah, so Northern Europe has been in pretty bad shape. We've talked about it a few times. Really, Germany, parts of Poland, parts of France, and then, of course, over in the UK have been very dry, as has the kind of Scandinavian peninsula. But the thing is, they had some relief come through in the last few days, some cooler temperatures, a little bit of precipitation. But that wasn't one of those things that ends all, you know, drought stress. It was just some temporary relief. Next 15 days, they kind of carry a warm and dry bias. So nothing coming through there to kind of save the crop. So that, you know, at least that's a positive for U.S. crops, given that they're continuing to have stresses over in parts of Europe.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
That, of course, Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.